The Around the NFL Podcast. We'll need some time to adapt to the pro game.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Feeling it.
Greg is having the time of his life on this Sunday. I can tell.
Well, it's nice that Dan, you know, last Sunday he wasn't here. Now I can just kick back and relax. We basically just sit here. It's Dan's show now.
Certainly not my show, but this is the YouTube Sunday night show. You'll see, and I have a sinus infection, so everyone be careful. Not feeling great. Fighting through. Chris Rose, one of our hosts, also on MLB Network, NFL Network, he said the number one thing when you're ill and you're an on-air guy, tell people that you're ill. Make light of it. It puts the whole thing to rest.
Develop some sympathy for you.
I see he also gave you tips on name dropping.
Yeah, Chris Rose. You know, he's a nice guy. I had a nice conversation with him. Anyway, yeah, you got to organize when you do the Sunday show. It's our flagship show here at the Around the NFL Podcast, where we go over every single Sunday game, including the Sunday Night Football showdown between the Colts and Patriots, which we'll get to at the bottom of the show. But there's a lot of stuff to talk about today, Mark. You had a nice Sunday. I sat across from you. You got a little upset about the Browns. We'll get to a little later. But in general, you seem to be in good spirits, Mark.
Well, you know, part of our job is just to maintain and to get through it, and that's what I did. It was quite a fun Sunday.
Mark's going to London, by the way.
A lot of good games.
Mark's going to London.
Mark
in 2 days.
On his way to London on Tuesday. So any of our listeners that are in London, you and Connor and Mark, you guys got to figure out where the big meetup's going to be next Friday or Saturday. I'll leave that to you guys.
Yeah, buy Mark a couple of pints.
I cannot wait to meet some of the English followers of the show.
Is it true that you actually spent some time in your life in England?
Yes,
it's been
chronicled. I lived there when I was a young boy, and I'm going to try. If there's any break in the schedule, I'm going to get out to Weybridge in Surrey,
Weybridge,
which is where I lived, if I can find a way to get there.
I actually Googled Gary Barnidge today to find out if he was English. He sounds English. Gary Barnidge? He's like, Gary Barnidge?
Nah. You think we would have known that by
Kentucky.
Now?
From Kentucky. Yeah, I thought so, but just in case I missed it. Sometimes you know something will go off your radar and you should know it, but you didn't. So Gary Barnidge.
Well, historically totally a Brit, I'm sure, way back in the Barnidge family.
His lineage. So yes, a lot of good games to get to. And there should be nothing else. We should just get to it.
Please.
So much work, so many games to get to. And we'll start like we did at least 2 weeks ago. Greg, I don't know. I did listen to the show. None of it stuck with me.
Forgettable show.
2 weeks ago, we led. No, it was a great show. Working with Mike. 2 weeks ago, we led with all the undefeated teams. So let's keep doing that. And we'll start with the Carolina Panthers, who we all thought, or most of America thought, that this would be the end of the Panthers as an undefeated team. They're going to the clink. Seattle Seahawks, they're going to get it together. But guess what? Things didn't work out that way because the Panthers remain undefeated after staging a dramatic fourth quarter rally. The end, a 27-23 win over the Seahawks at the clink. Greg, the Panthers are 6-0. Am I correct?
That is incorrect.
5-0.
5-0.
The Panthers are 5-0, and the Seahawks are in deep, deep trouble. Which reality surprises you more?
The Panthers being undefeated. Yeah, I know they had an easy schedule early, but this proved they're a different sort of Panthers team. And I know Cam Newton's had some nice moments in his career. He had a game-winning drive to beat the Saints to win the NFC South in 2013. He beat the Patriots on Monday Night Football once. I thought this was the most impressive thing I've ever seen from Cam Newton, to be down 20-7 in the second half against the Seahawks, to be down 23-14 going midway through the fourth quarter and rip off two straight 80-yard drives. And these weren't cheap drives where he's getting penalties and running. He's throwing lasers down the heart of their defense, past their Legion of Boom, into tight windows. He was just razor sharp when it mattered most. And I'm watching this game, and I'm thinking, which quarterback do I want at the end of games right now? Cam Newton or Russell Wilson? I want Cam Newton.
Wow.
I mean, based on this season, there's not a heck of a lot of debate there.
A legitimate MVP candidate at this stage of the season, right?
I don't think so in a season where Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers have played this well, because I don't think it's fair.
Dalton.
I don't think it's fair to them. Andy Dalton I'd throw in there too, because I don't think Cam's been that great each and every week. But that's not taking anything away from what he did. Whenever they absolutely needed a drive, they did it. It was 80-yard drives, four of them in the game, In their other whole nine drives, they only had 63 yards. So it was an uneven game like that.
We talked on the last show about, you know, listen, Carolina's going to have one of these signature wins before we take them seriously.
Which was a fair viewpoint.
But is this actually that win? Is this Seattle team that good?
Yes.
Is it?
Well, because all these losses have been by one scores to pretty good teams. And they looked very good for most of the day, just like they did last week. And the games they're losing, I mean, it's to the Bengals at the end. It's to the Packers in the fourth quarter. It's to the Panthers. And just watching it, I didn't think the Seahawks gave this game away. Granted, they made a big mistake. Maybe we'll talk about that on the last play where Greg Olsen scored. There was some sort of miscommunication between Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas. But other than that, the Panthers earned everything they got.
And even if the Seahawks go in the tank this year and finish 7-9, at this stage of the season, going into today, it was still understood to be very difficult to win West in that spot. And the Carolina Panthers went in there and did it. And to me, it's like, now you could legitimately worry about the Seahawks team. Am I right?
I'm not that worried about them. They're one of two teams with a losing record and a positive point differential. They have the talented roster. They've got good coaching.
Well, but like you believe in the Cardinals, it's going to be tough. They're still two games behind the Cardinals.
Right.
So that's a problem. It's going to be tougher to win three road games potentially if they don't win this division. When you're at 2-4, it's going to be harder to win your division.
None of that bothers me. We were at a similar place last year at this time, and the Seahawks got everyone back, became the most dominant team in the league. I look at their roster and their coaching staff, and I think, and basically their results. Fourth quarters, they haven't come through, but that doesn't mean they're not a good team.
I'm with you. I don't think it's time to panic. It is positive also to look at what Jimmy Graham did today. It sounded like he finally had the game that we thought he'd have from wire to wire with this team.
And that's fine that, you know, Graham did have his best game of the year. And what you're going to hear this week, people are going to, because I felt like there were too many excuses made for the defense last week in their meltdown against Cincinnati. They say, well, offense isn't taking enough time off the clock. In your building, with the lead coming off that terrible loss last week, you got to finish. You got to finish the game.
Well,
and Seattle, just like in the Super Bowl, and they couldn't close it out, they could not close this game out against the Panthers, which, you know, Cam Newton's playing great, and he played great today, but that they made Cam Newton and the Panthers look like the best offense ever.
When it's January and Doug Baldwin is honking about everybody disrespecting them in October, he's talking to Dan Hanley.
That's fine.
I'm not going to be that guy
It's a thing that they collapse late in games. It's a thing. Their last five losses have now been games where they've led in the fourth quarter. So far this season, I think they've been outscored 76-27 in the fourth quarter. So when they got to the fourth quarter in the stadium there, they put up, you know, fourth quarter, everyone starts going crazy. Here's our time. I think they got a field goal to start off the quarter, and everyone, you know, in the building is thinking about it. They're talking about it. And what do? They give up two 80-yard drives to a team that has one receiver. Devin Funchess dropped three passes today. Greg Olsen is having the best season of his career. They have one receiver in a team that's not known for throwing the ball, and they just go right down, just like last week that the Bengals did, and they do nothing on offense, too. Well, and it's bad. It's in their head.
But part of it last year, and the reason they were so dangerous, was they can chew up the clock and just beat you up with the running game. And I know you wrote that Marshawn Lynch looked great today, looked a lot better, but still, it's 54 yards. That's 100 yards less than he'd have in games last year at times.
Yeah, they didn't get it done on the ground. I just thought he looked good on a few runs, very explosive. He looked healthy. But Jonathan Stewart was the better runner in this game.
That's encouraging.
He fought through a lot of tackles. He played really well. And just gutsy darts from Cam. It's fun to see.
Panthers have a 9-game regular season winning streak. Give him some credit.
Williams is a problem, by the way, too. He's becoming more and more of a problem every week. They tried to pick on him. I mean, he had an up and down game, but he's becoming a problem for that team.
The Panthers deserve credit. I mean, I was one of probably many people that kind of wrote them off as the weakest undefeated team early on, but now you got to take them seriously. That was a gut check game.
Sure.
Another undefeated team, the Denver Broncos, and Peyton Manning, who's been carried by his defense this year. Let's face it, they had to carry him again today. He threw three more interceptions, including a pick six, but the Broncos got a Brandon McManus field goal in overtime to escape with a 26-23 win over the Cleveland Browns. Greg, I'll throw this to you again. The Broncos are now 6-0, but does any of this really matter if Peyton Manning is going to be one of the five worst quarterbacks in football? And honestly, I'm not even joking. Does it matter if this is how Peyton Manning is going to be?
Yes, because one, that assumes that Peyton Manning will stay that way. And even if he does stay that way, they at this rate, they're going to have a bye in the playoffs in a home game. And the way this defense is playing, they're going to have a chance to win every week. It's crazy to watch a Broncos team get worse and worse on offense each week like this, though. I thought this is the week where it finally ends. Joe Hayden is out. Deshaun Gibson is out. This is one of the worst five or six defenses in the league. And yet, I would say this was the worst game Peyton Manning had all season. He did have a few good throws. That's the thing. People say, like, yeah, you can't throw the ball anymore. He had three or four really good throws, but he keeps making the mental errors. He should have lost this game a million times, and it was on the Browns that they didn't take
it. His reaction after the third pick, Mark, when Peyton, he, like, grabbed at his face mask, and it was like he almost couldn't believe it. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it here. Like, he couldn't even believe that he's making these errors. It's because
they're telegraph throws. They're mental errors.
And Demaryius Thomas did not help him at all in fourth quarter or overtime. Two terrible drops. But Manning remains the problem, and yet they're still undefeated.
You know, I think Greg nailed it. Cleveland came into the game with, I think, one interception all season. They're not a team that last year they were delivering turnovers. They're not this year. And for them to pick on him the way they did, it was almost like, and I was sort of watching this off to the corner of my eye while I was covering a different game, but you were almost counting on Manning making another blunder. It's like every couple, he just kept doing it over and over, throwing bizarre incompletions as well.
He missed some throws by a lot. I don't know if it was the weather. He had the glove on. I mean, it was under 50 degrees. That's the first time this season for a Manning game. He was off target. He also, like I said, made some big throws. But this is something we are relying on it every week. He leads the league in interceptions. I mean, that's who he is right now.
That's why I side with Mark on this. Come playoff time, I don't think you can just trot the defense out there and say they're going
to
win.
No, they have to get better.
Their opponents this year are a combined 10-24. They're going to be facing a lot better teams in the playoffs. And
are you counting the Broncos' wins in that? That's not fair when people do that.
You get the point. Okay. 10-24, make it 10-20. They're okay. Bad teams. But, you know, he's my new litmus test guy. Jordy Nelson used to be the litmus test. If you're watching football games, you know he's great. Who are they going to trot out next week to argue against you on NFL Network? Someone who's not watching games and insists Peyton Manning's a good quarterback.
And they're
Solly Wilcots. He's sticking by him.
They're telling us what they think of him with the play calling, with these runs on third and long, and all the third down throws are short of the sticks, and they're just hoping for yards after contact. And one of the big arguments has been the offensive line's not playing well, and the running game's not playing well. He was protected fine. The Browns did not have much of a pass rush today. The running game was good throughout. They really gave the ball to Ronnie Hillman as the primary back for most of the game, and that was how they were moving the ball. He was good, and C.J. Anderson did all the work in the overtime drive.
This from Ronnie Hillman on social media after the game. You need to get off Peyton. That's our QB bottom line. You fake fans don't say anything when he's winning us the game, SMH, which means, Mark, what?
Shaking my head. That's what he's doing. It's like it's one of the dumbest.
Like
it's one of the dumbest
head.
Things online because it just I don't know.
I don't need to hear.
Bizarre to me.
And there are a lot of dumb things online.
I agree with you on that. I don't need to hear these players every week telling the fans what to do and who's fake and who's real. It's like fans can boo or get on a player when he's struggling as mightily as Peyton Manning is.
Mark, were you SMHing? You know, after that Josh McCown interception, because we should talk about the Browns side of things. They had the ball past midfield at the end of regulation. Josh McCown threw interception. They picked off Manning in overtime and had the ball around the 40. At that point, they only needed, 5 yards to get into
They went back 18.
And they went back backwards. What are you feeling about Josh McCown right now?
Well, it was like the reverse of a rafflecopter. How about that? Because, and listen, it just seemed like Cleveland. We talked about this way with the Jaguars, where you start to see hints of a team developing, but they don't have the DNA from the coach on down on how to win these kind of games. Now, Cleveland did last week, but that was the Ravens, and we found out they are just not a good team. Browns fans are still expecting that mistake to happen, and they've got, until that changes, this is a typical type of Browns loss.
As bad as Manning was in this game, Josh McCown was worse, and that was he said he was trying to throw the ball out of bounds, which makes more sense than what just throwing it up for grabs, which he did, but he always makes those plays where he's surrounded by guys and he just throws it high up in the air.
He was also facing a much more difficult defense.
Right.
Than Peyton Manning.
That's absolutely
Was this
true.
The best game an offense has played against Denver?
No. They had a ton of drives. I'd love to go look quickly, but the fact is they were going three and outs back and forth the whole game. They didn't even get 300 yards in this game on 15 drives, something like that.
So the Panthers and Broncos remain perfect, as do Chris Wessling. The Cincinnati Bengals. Andy Dalton threw three touchdown passes. A 34-21 victory over the Buffalo Bills in Orchard Park. Wes, A.J. Green neutralized in this game, and yet Andy Dalton still thrived. There's something different going on here, isn't there?
Yeah, when I think about this game, I think of two things. One, how loaded the Bengals roster is, that they really have no weak points. And two, that the Bills' defense is overrated. Hmm. The Bengals' offense, I mean, everybody talks about the Cowboys' offensive line. Andy Dalton never gets touched. He has all day back there to pick defenses apart. And then when you take away A.J. Green, because the Bills do take away number one wide receivers, that's what their defense does. But Marvin Jones has a great game. Tyler Eifert is a great red zone weapon. Gio Bernard picked up a bunch of first downs. They have so many weapons.
And Mario Williams came out and kind of questioned the defense a little bit and the scheme itself, which is funny because two seasons ago, with a similar scheme under Mike Pettine, they set a franchise record for sacks. They had a ton of sacks last season. And they have something, they're very low right now. They're just absolutely.
They had 9 sacks on the season, and Mario Williams said something like he set the record for dropping back into coverage. Look, any coverage that you have with Mario Williams in it, and they're only rushing 3, you can understand why that front 4, which is so good, is going to be frustrated. They think Rex is outsmarting himself.
And more importantly, Kyle Williams left with a knee injury. It looked like it might be serious.
It sounds like he won't make the trip. They're leaving as we speak. They're leaving Sunday night for London. It sounds like Kyle Williams will be staying home, which is a big loss.
And the Bills are now 3-3. And in a weird way, it's a sneaky maybe blessing in disguise, because there was these strange reports before the game, one from Rap Sheet, that EJ Manuel had a chance to hold on to the starting job if he played well in this game. Which I didn't get a chance to see every one of the snaps in this game, but it doesn't appear that Manuel had the type of game that would lead to a quarterback controversy. But that's, you didn't want any of that leaking out there. You didn't want any of that discussion, whether it's real or manufactured in the media by an agent or by a GM that has other interests. But that's just bad news. So Manuel not playing well and put that to bed is kind of a good thing to come out of a bad loss.
It's totally disruptive, and it begs the question of have the people inside the team not watched Tyrod Taylor and the growth
he's had?
Well,
they must not like something about him if it came from the team. Well, how did Manuel look?
Well, he's terrible. I mean, his ball placement is just among the worst you'll ever see. His decision-making's bad. They went 4-3 and outs in the first half when Andy Dalton was running away with the game. I don't know why. What was the point of that report? You lessen Taylor's leadership on the team.
It doesn't
when
help
you're
him at all.
It undermines your starter.
Maybe it's supposed to be pumping up EJ Manuel, and it's someone that really believes in
him. If you're pumping up EJ Manuel, you're not doing it 2 hours before game time on a Sunday where EJ Manuel's
well,
not
at the
even
cost of your starter. And it's, it's funny because like Greg Roman in San Francisco, they made a switch at quarterback during the season after spending so much time in practice with Colin Kaepernick. We don't know what they're seeing behind the scenes.
Well, they don't like it that Taylor doesn't see Sammy Watkins because he's short. He's a short quarterback.
Or maybe he just doesn't see the field well in general.
What? That's
who knows.
If that's his biggest evil, it's about...
So, by the way,
fifth
he's had
on the
five
list
starts.
Of EJ Manuel's biggest
he's had five NFL this, starts.
And Sammy Watkins' touchdown catch today got hurt again on crutches after the half. And it's just like, this guy can come out and ask for the ball, but you got to stay on the field too. The worst thing this could be Doug Whaley, who put his job on the line by going to get Watkins, and then him reacting to Watkins going to the media about needing the ball and that leading to this issue with the quarterback situation. It's just... You hope it's not that, because that is as dysfunctional as it gets.
It bothers me that this is even an issue.
Right.
That they would leak that report. It just, Tyrod Taylor is such a better quarterback than EJ Manuel.
He's been great. Before we move on, in your piece, you called Andy Dalton a legitimate MVP candidate, Chris Wessling. Is it time to junk the Dalton scale, the measurement, whereas each quarterback in the league is measured by Andy Dalton, the prime meridian of quarterbacks?
It's a serious question.
With the way he's playing now, is it time to junk the scale?
I think we need more than a 6-game sample size.
Okay.
The only thing I'd say, though, is one thing that we thought about Dalton, because it was true on the field up until the season, was that he hit his ceiling the minute he entered the league, that there was never a better version of Andy Dalton over all his seasons. He is a legitimately different quarterback this year. And I would say the scale has to work to be functional. And if it's not going to work, if he goes 13-3 and plays this
well. Well, it might be something we evaluate in the offseason.
Sure.
Right. Yeah,
big owners meetings that we have.
All of what you said is true, that he has been better this year noticeably. He's shown improvement. But I think where I stand and where I stood all offseason, it doesn't matter what the Bengals do from September through December. Mm. I need to see it in January.
TD thinks the body language is better on Andy Dalton, but I think that's true. I think it's the hair.
Yeah.
But when you have good hair and you know this, Dan, you're just feeling good from head to toe.
I never feel myself until the product is in.
There you go. And that's a Dan ritual. He comes into the office. First thing he does, put a little gel in the hair.
It's funny because it's...
And then, you have an aura around you like a pregnant lady where you just feel something good is going to happen with you.
That, everything you just said is accurate. Moving on.
That you're a pregnant lady?
Yeah, I'm prego. I'm due at the end of the month. I'm taking a long maternity leave. Another undefeated team, the Green Bay Packers. They will go into their bye week without a loss. Aaron Rodgers looked human for the second straight week, and Phillip Rivers threw for 503 yards and also has another kid on the way. That's 8 kids. Come on.
That's a preschool.
And you know what? And he can obviously take care of those kids.
Settled down.
He's a multimillionaire, but we got a lot of people on this planet. We got an overpopulation.
He can afford to feed them.
Let's slow down.
Beautiful transition from the pregnant woman conversation to this.
I would encourage Phillip Rivers and his wife to have a lot more kids because they can provide for them and raise wonderful people.
Says a man who had 7 brothers.
6 brothers. 6 brothers. Seven was total.
At a certain point, it's rubbing it in a little bit. It's like, I'm that potent. Anyway. So Rivers threw for 503 yards, but Green Bay's defense got a goal line stop in the final minute. They secure a 27-20 win at Lambeau. Wes, the Packers, they don't look so indestructible of late, but results are results.
Yeah, I think it might have been you who said after week 3 or week 4, you can take away Jordy Nelson, you can take away Eddie Lacy, and Aaron Rodgers still plays like an MVP.
That was me.
Packers keep right on rolling.
That was me, actually.
And I think we saw the breaking point the last couple of weeks. You can blame it on Jordy Nelson, but it's not really. You take away Davante Adams, Andrew Quarles, Ty Montgomery. Eddie Lacy's completely ineffective because he's playing through an ankle injury or because he's overweight, one or the other. But you've got all these people around Aaron Rodgers, and then you've got he can't make back shoulder throws to Jeff Janis because they're not on the same page. Richard Rodgers isn't coming down with catches in tight spaces. Cobb is dropping passes.
He's throwing, James Starks was open for a potential late touchdown, but that's a tricky route that James Starks is not used to running.
Yeah, basically his number one, number three, and number four receivers from August are out of the lineup. So he's throwing to a bunch of guys. At one point, he's throwing in a red zone. You came over to my desk, and they show who's on the field. It's Jared Abradaris and some guy named Justin Perillo or something.
Those are made up.
Those are his red zone weapons.
Yeah.
So I think it can't
be a
surprise.
And they threw for 8.8 yards per attempt today.
And they score 27 points and win the game and stay undefeated. So that's the luxury of, being the Packers.
What was it like to watch Phillip Rivers top his performance from Monday night when he threw it for 790 times or whatever? And today he threw it 65 times for 500 yards. Those are real statistics.
He was surgical against the defense that Football Outsiders ranked as number one in the NFL on pass defense. Now, the Packers hadn't really played any great quarterbacks this year, so it's telling that Rivers did this to him, but Stevie Johnson was inactive. Keenan Allen played awesome for 3 quarters and then sat out the 4th quarter with a hip injury.
He had 14 catches?
In 3 quarters.
That is outrageous.
His performance might have been more impressive than DeAndre Hopkins. He was making great catches.
What is the deal with Eddie Lacy? 3 rushes off 4 carries, and James Starks just takes over.
Well, I look at it this way. We've seen Eddie Lacy when he's healthy, and he's an excellent football player. So he's either out of shape or unhealthy. We know a couple weeks ago he was playing through an ankle injury, and when they play James Starks this much over him, it suggests to me they're just trying to get to the bye, get Eddie Lacy healthy, and then get him going. But he did not look like himself. He looked sluggish and slow.
There's something about this Chargers team. I mean, they're in these games. They're against the Packers and the Steelers, but now they're at 2-4. I mean, this is a team that I don't know if they need to make the playoffs to keep everyone there, but pretty disappointing start for San Diego in general.
They're not far away from being 1-5 either, or I guess a better record based on every one of their games.
They can't run the Dalton line.
Every team behind them we cannot take seriously. Everybody in front of them we can.
Okay, that's good.
It checks out.
When you make cryptic statements like that, you're usually hiding some kind of intel.
Yeah, I know. I said something last show that I think McCoy, there might be some talk that they need to be a winning team or else he's gone.
Saucy.
Greg is secretly our podcast insider.
You know why? Because Greg has this thing all the insiders out there and He's got some sources within buildings, I think, that we don't know about. So whenever you see him texting, he's always, that's information coming into him.
Sure. Well, he's a journalist. Hardworking journalist.
Journo.
Giving me boss. A good reputation, unwarranted.
Moving on, Landry Jones threw a pair of touchdown passes to Martavis Bryant in relief of an injured Michael Vick, and the Pittsburgh Steelers came back from a deficit to notch a 25-13 win over the Arizona Cardinals. Mark, you know, listen, Landry Jones, nice little performance there, but losing to a Big Ben-free Steelers squad is no way for a team of ATN to comport itself. Jeez.
It reminds me a little bit of the way you described the Cardinals a couple weeks ago, where they absolutely dominated in, on every category statistically. 421 yards for Carson Palmer. They were moving the ball up and down the field, plenty of big plays, but they could not turn the real estate into points. And I give the Steelers credit for shutting down the run game for much of the affair. And they just, a couple big turnovers for Arizona. I mean, you cannot on the road commit the turnovers. And Carson Palmer threw a killer pick at the end that really put this game out of reach for them. Pittsburgh, it was just one of the stranger games I've seen all season. Clearly, if you're without Big Ben next week, I would put Landry Jones in over Mike Vick. What happened right away was that the playbook seemed to completely open up. And Arizona's defense responded differently to Landry Jones, who was taking more shots downfield. It opened up the run game for Le'Veon Bell, who was just seeing seven men in the box time after time with Vic on the field. It was completely ineffectual. So, you know, it's not a good situation for Pittsburgh, but it was huge to come out of here with a win. Huge
That's
to come out with a win.
Against a team.
They're not even close to being a better team than Arizona, but they got it done today.
I mean, against a top five team, in your building without your quarterback, and you actually go to your third string quarterback and you get a win, you're 4-2 now, and you can now withstand being without Roethlisberger for another week, and there's a very good chance that happens, and you're going to be okay. I mean, this was their biggest win of the season.
Easy.
The fact that they've now ripped off two of these against two decent teams, you know, in San Diego and then a very good team in Arizona, I mean, that just makes me think, how good can these Steelers be? You get Ryan Shazier back, you get Ben Roethlisberger back. It's like they're right back where we thought they'd be before the season, which is as one of the real Super Bowl contenders.
It is funny to watch, though, what they have become and what they were with Vic on the field and no Big Ben. One passing yard in the first half.
MVP
and you talk anything other than quarterback, I don't listen anymore. Because this was another example that when you take that one starter off the field at quarterback, this was a completely average offense.
Look at Martavis Bryant runs wild today, and Antonio Brown didn't do much, but I totally agree. The defense is much better than we thought early in the season and in August, and once you get Big Ben back, you've got Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown. That's a Super Bowl contender.
In a two-team division now.
And I think that everyone, if you do have your PS2 somewhere in storage, you can get that out, dust it out, plug it in, see if you can find Madden 2004. Mm. You know, with Michael Vick on the cover of with the Falcons, put that in there, play a game, because I don't think we'll ever see another Michael Vick snap in the NFL.
You just
pouring a little out for Michael Vick. Now, listen, actually, I'm not going to go too crazy about Michael Vick. There's a lot of people that think he should have never even come back to the NFL. But if you're somebody that guy defined an era of the NFL, and I think it was very clear by the end of when he left the game and these past two games that Michael Vick's finished.
This probably was his last start in the NFL. It might even be his last appearance in the NFL. It's possible.
Well, that's what I just said. Thanks for
listening. On the field. I know. That's what I'm saying. But what I'm noticing is that you're plagiarizing your own tweet these days. You know, your tweet's on the screen, and you're just using that material. No,
well,
that's
kind of like my journal of my thoughts over the course of Sunday, and some make it to
the good
second
ones,
draft.
I like to look at you as like a multi-platform weapon that you operate on Twitter, and you bring the same content to the exact same content to the podcast.
Word for word.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like the end of Mr. Belvedere. When you write in your journal, you have to announce it as well.
Straight out of China.
That's with another timely 80s show.
When you're Vic and you get outplayed by the kicker from Friday Night Lights, it's time to go.
Very fair. Wow, Landry, that's right. Mark, have you gotten to season two yet of Friday Night Lights?
I knocked off a few episodes last night. You know, I didn't realize this season is 26 episodes long or something.
Kind of
it's taking
TV
me.
Model.
I don't have a whole lot of free time. I've got about 9 more episodes in season one.
Friday Night Lights, I believe, premiered in 2006, which is light years ago in terms of what's happened in television since, how television is produced. Now, Now it's like 12 to 14 episodes a season max. Back then it was like, hey, writer's room, go crank out 37 episodes for
like
a season.
Binge watching is now, I need a lost weekend. I need to vanish from society to get through, you know, a season.
We need a television podcast.
Showing up.
Oh, yeah.
Theology podcast.
About shows that came out a decade ago?
Yeah, or two. And Mr. Belvedere, by the way, was not a well-known sitcom. So if you're overseas listeners, he was a British butler, Mr. Belvedere, who landed in Pittsburgh.
It had British roots, yeah.
Bob Uecker was prominently involved. All right, moving on.
Well, real quick, for all the people worried about the team of ATL or asking me if I'm worried about them, not worried at all. Again,
yeah, we got a song.
160 more points than their opponent. The Cardinals are a well-oiled machine. They're going to have a few losses. They're still a great team.
I agree with that. It's disappointing they haven't played, that they've been outplayed or that they've lost two out of three games since we picked them. This is something that when you have Seattle in the division, though, you want to take advantage of every opportunity to beat a Landry Jones / Michael Vick team that you got. That's all.
That's fair. We still got the faith coming from us. Don't worry, Cards. Don't be nervous. I think there's a little bit of jitters. They think they need to be even better. Just be yourselves.
Just be who you are.
Be yourselves. Let's move on. The Minnesota Vikings could not get Adrian Peterson going and got another quiet game from Teddy Bridgewater, but they still did enough for a 16-10 win over the Kansas City Chiefs. Greg, I watched this game, and I would like to put in a formal request that we don't have to watch any more Chiefs games.
As a group. Well, but the problem, like, that I could consider, but there's a team on the other side of the field each week when they play, and I don't think there's any, I know the technology is improving. Uh-huh. I don't think you can just take the Chiefs off the field and just watch the Vikings.
I don't know.
I need you to tell me about the Vikings in general, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. But I feel bad when I say that. If you're a Chiefs fan that's listening to the show, I mean no disrespect. Not towards the fans. The fans deserve better.
Right.
You know, they deserve a team they could get excited about.
Why are they so tough to watch today?
Because, well, without Jamal Charles, there's nothing there. You got Alex Smith, who's, you know, Mr. Fuddy-Duddy, throwing those little dump passes over the middle.
Mr. Fuddy-Duddy.
You know, not pushing the ball downfield. Travis Kelce disappears for stretches. I don't know how that happens. Jeremy Maclin got hurt in this game. Things are even worse. Without Maclin involved, they got
a lot of drop passes for Alex Smith, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean the team didn't play well. Charkandrick West didn't do anything. Nyle Davis didn't do anything. West had a bad fumble also in the fourth quarter when they had a little momentum. This team went from last week to this week 4.5 quarters without scoring a point without Jamal Charles. So the Vikings didn't play particularly well in this game. The Chiefs defense, to its credit, did a really nice job bottling up Adrian Peterson, who did not get going ever in this game. But at the end of the day, it was just a boring, workmanlike victory.
And that's what they want to be on offense, it seems, because this isn't a departure from what they were last year either. They're content as an organization to have Alex Smith at quarterback and all these shortcomings that, you know, that are joined with that. And they want to win and lose games 16-10. They're going to lose a lot more than they're going to win. And I put it on Andy Reid.
They've had a lot of bad luck this year losing.
Well,
close,
bad luck, but they're not built. They're not built to go out and dominate teams on offense and have a nice time being 6-10 when that's the case.
I think they have like two more years invested in Alex Smith. But if you're Andy Reid, is there any thought to just kick the tires on old Chase, a former Making the Leap candidate?
I think they should.
Well, we were calling for that a couple weeks ago.
I don't think they will, just because of the guaranteed money in Smith's contract. Did Teddy Bridgewater look any better this week?
Not really. Have you guys seen a game where you thought he's looked really good this year?
Yes, against
one game.
Detroit, he was just about perfect. But other than that,
he was just a guy in the field. I mean, he threw one touchdown, he threw two picks, not good throws. He has three touchdowns for the entire season now. So I didn't take much out of that. When you guys check out the game, maybe you'll see something different. The one guy that did stand out for them is Stephon Diggs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, fifth round pick. I don't even think he was active the first few weeks of the season. The last 2 weeks, he has 13 catches for 216 yards. Had 7 for 129 today. So You know, there are guys in that offense, Cordarrelle Patterson, of course, Mark, your boy, Charles Johnson. They haven't been able to get anybody to find any success, and it looks like they hit on something with Diggs here, so expect him to be a regular part of that offense.
You called that on Thursday's show that, you know, Mike Wallace, what does he have, 2 catches for 23 yards?
He had 9 targets and 2 catches, whereas Stephon Diggs has 9 targets and he has 120.
He's not Mike Wallace anymore. He doesn't move like he used to.
Kyle Rudolph, 9 yards. I mean, tight ends in Norv Turner's offense typically thrive, and it's been the opposite for some of these so-called playmakers that we were touting all summer.
Vikings haven't played well, and yet they're 3-2, and I think they have the Lions and Bears next, so they have a chance to be right where everyone was hoping they would be, something like 5-2.
Is Adrian Peterson still the same guy? Because he's had 2 kind of really bad games now statistically, but this was not his fault. He was getting swallowed up in the backfield before he even touched the ball. He could really use Teddy Bridgewater heating up a little bit to take some heat off him. All right. Now, it's the time of the show. It's Sunday where we welcome in a woman. That's it. I'll leave it there. Let's bring her in.
Hey. Here I am again.
So, it never gets less awkward, that intro.
No, it's, yeah, I said, something else.
I said woman, but I mean wolf woman.
Right.
Colleen Wolf, not only a friend of the Around the NFL podcast, but you know what? An actual friend of ours.
Oh, wow. That's right. Sweet, guys.
We've hung out together.
Yeah.
We've ingested liquids, and we've had conversations.
We've, like, had beers together.
Yeah. So the way you said it is strange.
Very murky description. By
I had a friend in town this weekend who listens to the podcast now. He's a recent adoptee. And he was saying, he's like, that Colleen Wolf, she just needs to be on the show every time.
That Colleen Wolf.
This is. I'm telling you the truth.
I don't think so.
I praise.
I think this is the perfect amount of Colleen.
Not too much more.
Colleen, she is every Pump Sunday. She's one of the faces of NFL Now. She's also a constant presence on the NFL Now Game Day Blitz program on Sundays, which Greg, you and I sat in on NFL Now. Mm-hmm. A little story about that today. I did my 2-segment thing. And then Shaq was like, all right, fella, you know, great to see you again. All right, Colleen, take it away. And I was like, oh, I thought I was done. So I put down my little stick mic and I start to walk away, and I see all these people behind the camera like shooting me daggers, and then it's like, no, you're not clear. And now I'm standing in the middle of the set, and then I just bail, and everyone is just giving me a look like I am human garbage.
Why not try to be a professional when you're on the air?
I was trying.
Plus, in what scenario are you not taking the mic with you? If nothing, even if you think the segment's over, at least bring it with you.
Right. Be helpful. Be a professional.
I don't know.
I didn't notice any of this. I didn't see any of it at all.
Are you plugged in? I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Sometimes.
All right.
So, isn't going clear a Scientology term?
Yes, it is. I am not a Scientologist. That's for the theology show. Or is it? Is Scientology a religion? Mark, we'll start with you.
We will discuss on this summer's theology podcast.
All right, great. All right, so let's continue with the games. Colleen's back. It's always great to have Colleen. And since Colleen's here and I'm in a good mood now, we're going to talk about the New York Jets. Ryan Fitzpatrick threw 2 touchdown passes and ran for another score. And Chris Ivory posted 196 total yards. It all added up to a 34-20 Jets win.
Yes, it did.
Over the Washington Redskins at the Meadowlands. The Jets, Mark Sessler. I know the Browns stink again. And I don't revel in that, but at least...
Doesn't sound wow. Like it.
Wow, you kind of do, since they were a play away from beating an undefeated team and being 3-3, scrappy Browns. Give them a little credit.
Just know that the Jets, a fellow pain-ranking team, they're doing okay.
I think that helps.
Because I'm very happy for you, Dan.
I don't understand why
you're not
that
jumping on the Jets bandwagon now?
Yeah, I was inviting Mark on. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, I don't need to get on that train.
Okay, it's going to end horribly. But this is my takeaway from this game. And yes, the Redskins were all sorts of beat up. And, you know, the Jets are at home. They should win this game. I now think the Jets are actually good. I think they're good. I think not only they have a pretty nice schedule this year and they have a really good defense, I think they're legitimately good. And it's because Chris Ivory, he's not the best running back in football, even though Brandon Marshall said it, but he is a top 5 running back right now. So not only do you have a top 3 defense, you have a top 5 running back. Brandon Marshall, Wes, if you were to do an end of season wide receiver rankings, Brandon Marshall keeps this up. He's a top five wide receiver this year. This guy is doing something. And, you know, Don Maynard, who I know, Wes, you know well, the great wide receiver of the 68 world champion Jets. He was the last wide receiver to have 100 yards in four straight games. That's what Brandon Marshall did today. So you have a great, great wide receiver, a great running back, a great defense, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is okay.
Should we pop champagne?
Yeah.
Do it?
Okay.
You got a good offensive coordinator. I think that's one of the keys of the whole equation.
Fitzpatrick played great today. He had one interception. So he does. He's going to make a mistake every week like that. Sometimes he'll make more than one. But he made some big throws, and he's been making plays all year with his legs. He had an 18-yard touchdown run that won this game, essentially, put the game away. So he's been getting first downs all season with his legs. He's been limiting the killer mistakes. Put it all together, the Jets are good. This is a 10-win team.
If they can play a team that's missing eight starters every week, they'll be
fine.
Whatever,
throne of sneeze. Well, watch the game and tell me what
you think.
They're
a much more complete team than last year, and it starts with all the pieces on defense that Rex Ryan was not given at the end of his tenure. And we always talked about the fact that, you know, what Marshall did is he turns Eric Decker into not the number one and only target on the field, but a very good number two, and you've got weapons all of a sudden. All right, so you're right. They are pretty
good. And they're not great.
Go 10-6, that means they go 6-5 down the stretch.
And that could happen because they're only good.
They could do that.
And the Patriots are better. I would be happy with a 10-6, get in the playoffs, and then see what happens with that defense. Absolutely.
Did Ryan Fitzpatrick play the best game by a Jets quarterback in the past decade?
No.
Because ESPN's QBR says he did. They gave him a 99 QBR.
He was very good, but he's not throwing downfield really. He's basically taking what the defense gives him. I thought he played a very nice game by Ryan Fitzpatrick standards, but I don't know. I feel like maybe some of those Sanchez games before everything went downhill were probably better. Brett Favre threw six touchdowns in a game against the Cardinals once. Every once in a while, there's a good Jet quarterback game. But Fitzpatrick is getting the job done, and Geno Smith is not getting in anytime soon.
They came into this game in the second half and scored 24 straight points, then just, dropped the mic.
Well, right. I was reading the tweets in this game, a lot of people were saying the Jets were very lucky to even be close in the first half, considering how poorly they played.
They turned it over three times in the first half, and it was very Jetsy. And it was basically all the things I had been concerned about. They were down 13-10 at the half. And then Darrell Revis had an interception early in the third quarter. He now has six takeaways in five games, so he's been well worth the money so far. And that changed the whole tenor of the game. They went nuts after that, scored 17 straight points. And that was pretty much it.
How many wins did they have last year, the Jets?
I believe they were 4-12.
Okay.
They have reached that.
They equaled their win.
Well, it should be fun. And you're right about the schedule. I forget about that because I'm thinking, well, the Jets haven't really beaten anyone. I mean, they won in Indianapolis. That was solid. But they haven't beaten another team with a winning record. But then I'm looking at the rest of the schedule. They don't have any teams with winning records the rest of the way. You know, you have the division games, which aren't easy. You have the Patriots twice, which is very difficult. But other than that, it's Cake City.
Including next week. That's a great game, Jets-Patriots. That, you think that'll be talked about at all?
I think on this podcast it will be that, and whether they're going to bench Kirk Cousins in Washington after the game. Jay Gruden said no way.
He's
of course not.
I mean, he's underwhelming to me.
4.6 yards per attempt and a couple more picks.
Yeah. Now what's the alternative?
And it's not RG3. Who was active?
That's no alternative.
It won't be RG3.
RG3 was active for the first time this year, but that was because they're so banged up. I mean, they're not going to play RG3, right? Because they don't want to risk him getting hurt. But Cousins isn't the answer.
Neither is Colt McCoy, so you got to just stick with
it. There's absolutely no running game either to help them.
Mm. Right. They're supposed to be built on running and time of possession, and they've been hit or miss all year.
Yeah. They're an 8-8 team in the making, or maybe a 7 or 6 win team.
Well, they got to start winning. They're 0-3 on the road. They got to start winning some games on the road to be 8-8.
One bright spot.
They were really banged up, though. I mean, key guys, DeSean Jackson, Trent Williams. I mean, Jordan Reed, Matt Jones, all these guys are starters.
Seven inactive, six of them were starters. So,
one bright spot. I thought last week, Breshad Breeland played as well as any cornerback in the NFL. And then this week, he has two takeaways. Three takeaways.
He had two fumble recoveries and interception in the first half. And then Brandon Marshall made him look bad on a touchdown later, but He played a very good game. So there's some things. There's still a good defense, but the Jets rolled up a season high in yardage. If their defense takes a step back, this team's going to crater.
Geno Smith's next August in Oakland as a Raiders backup.
Mark is loving this. Rex Ryan.
Raiders backup.
Sure. Nice. Preseason action. Geno Smith out the door. We don't need him in New York anymore. Why would you ever bring that guy back into the fold? It's over.
Well, Geno, Fitzy hadn't been playing that well the past couple weeks, so this
Geno
is a big
Geno is toxic,
game.
Ultra toxic.
Yeah, that's what Keith Hansen thinks too. I was talking to my dad on the way to work today. He's like, "Danny, they can't put that guy in. He's a bum."
Your dad knows. Your dad's watched the Jets for decades and decades.
He's seen a
Your
lot of bad quarterbacks.
Like a great guy.
He is.
He's a straight shooter. He's
Danny, Geno Smith's terrible. Keith Hansen. All right, let's move on. All right, the Lions. They've done it. They did it. You predicted it. You said it, Greg Rosenthal.
The not-so-bold prediction. They were favored in the game.
What was your what was your headline?
The Lions, I don't remember.
Something about no more winless teams.
No more football teams will win a football
Lions win a game. There are no more winless teams. I don't know.
And involve football Greg. Twice.
Way to be quick on your feet there, Greg. The Lions have done it. Matt Prater kicked a 27-yard field goal with less than 3 minutes to go in overtime, giving Detroit a 37-34 win over the Bears, their first taste of victory in six tries. Colleen, at one point this game appeared to be headed towards a suitably pathetic tie, but it didn't happen that way.
Thank you for that. Yeah, no, Matt Stafford, he finally threw, for over 400 yards, and there was a stretch of like seven games where he hadn't thrown for over 300. And more importantly, he went to Calvin Johnson. So Calvin Johnson finally has a 100-yard game.
166.
Yeah. Wow. The first 100-yard game of his career, but guys, I'm still not sure what a catch is at this point.
Oh my God.
Because of another terrible, absurd call.
That was absolutely awful.
So Golden Tate, he gets the ball knocked out as he's crossing the goal line, right? And the Bears defender comes down with it before he hits the ground, and it's ruled an interception. Then it's reviewed and overturned and called a Golden Tate touchdown.
I mean, the argument was that it's not the same as these other highly controversial episodes where they're going to the ground and there's possession or not maintained, making your football play. It's that he had possession when he broke the plane, and so the play is over.
Right. Dean Blandino said
it sort of makes sense. It just wasn't. It was
here's
just
the problem.
Doesn't make any sense. When you've got a rule where everybody in the stadium thinks it's not a catch, everybody watching it at home thinks it's not a catch, Mike Pereira thinks it's not a catch, and all the coaches think it's not a catch. It's a broken rule. Fix it.
And the Dino Blandino thing doesn't work because you can't just throw to Dino and then he's going to say whatever technically the rule book might actually interpret it. It doesn't really provide me any clarity. I look at a guy like
would,
Pereira.
Though? Nothing would.
Well,
changing the rule would provide clarity to a rule that is clear.
That's at least like Pereira, for instance, who used to be the VP of officiating, they throw it to him and he's like, I don't know, ask Calvin Johnson if that's... Ask that's Brian. I mean, I don't know what to call
that's
this.
That's been my main point all along. The officials don't know the rule.
And take a look at that catch by Golden Tate, and then take a look at the Tyler Eifert catch from a couple weeks ago, and tell me which one should have been a touchdown.
Well, that's when it breaks.
You'll pull your hair out. You'll pull your hair out. Or the Devontae Freeman play from last week.
Right.
You'll pull your hair out trying to figure it out.
It's just way too much gray area.
And it's just taking attention away from the Cutler-Stafford duel in the dome that people were waiting for. 37-34. Everyone's dogging these big arms.
I thought Greg was getting out of his chair there. Get out of the chair!
It's too far. It's too
Name
complicated.
Name one human that was waiting for this.
Plugged in.
If they made a movie out of this game, it would be called, Unwanted.
Jay Cutler's best play in the world is just kind of running around for a while and throwing it up deep to Alshon Jeffrey.
Yes!
Now he can do that again.
It looks like a totally different offense, though, with Alshon in it. I mean,
absolutely.
You can see the marked difference.
And Eddie Royal is back. I mean, that helps.
Jay Cutler's not that bad.
They got some.
I know, with the Bears.
Yes, he's not that bad.
He is what he is. They're
competitive every week now because Jay Cutler's involved. And we were talking about this team as like a 14-loss team when he was hurt.
I agree with Colleen on Jeffrey, though, because the Bears-Chiefs, I watched that on Game Pass on Saturday and fell asleep in my chair watching it.
Well, like, the Chiefs game, were involved.
Well, there they were, but they're a different offense
his
with
two,
Jeffrey.
Are you kidding? But his two plays at the end of that game were maybe it two of the greatest
the
Jay Cutler plays of all time.
I'm
they
talking
were the
about
hilarious Cutlers.
It's a football game that's 60 minutes long. The first 59 minutes were an absolute disaster. I know that you are a quiet closet Jay Cutler
I'm
supporter.
I'm not quiet about it. I've been supporting him a decade.
Greg is out of the closet.
I'll tell you what. You're a Patriots fan. Go put Jay Cutler on your Patriots and see how you like that four games.
Cutler's on Greg's Mount Rushmore with Matt Castle
way,
and Brandon Weigel.
Oh, that mountain's going
to
crumble.
I did not expect to see old Sessler Fire Eyes talking about Cutler out of nowhere. You shot some fire at him.
Well, I was not fired at all.
He said it was a board game.
I just think it's just easy to say that you have all this love of Jay Cutler when they're still 2-4. They're going to always be a team that has nothing important happens with him at quarterback. Name his big victories. Give me 3 big Jay Cutler victories.
He won.
Or one.
He won a playoff.
But he's just not he just doesn't get that thing done.
He got outplayed by Caleb Haney in a playoff game.
Yeah.
Those throws are pretty well off track.
Is there anything else we need to know about this game, Colleen?
No, just the Bears defense gave up over 540 total yards.
Ooh, that's right.
So. Ooh, I like
that surprises me because they have been playing well.
Yeah.
I think it's because nobody has the same drives. They score too quickly.
They had been playing well, so now they have nothing to hold on to.
Good news, Mark. As we move on, the Baltimore Ravens continue to slip off the radar.
I know you love the radar anymore.
They gone. Their latest setback came at the big bell bottom. It ain't happening, Berman, so give it up.
We're the only ones keeping it going.
I know, it's true. It's true. Where Colin Kaepernick threw 2 touchdown passes to lead the 49ers to a 25-20 win over John Harbaugh's team. Mark, we forked the Ravens' playoff chances last week. No regrets after what we saw today.
No, I mean, it's really only Baltimore secondary can turn Colin Kaepernick into a functional quarterback. He played his best game of the year by far.
Torrey Smith even got a ball.
Well, and that's the saddest thing, because outside of Steve Smith, who I think with the kind of injury he had, I don't think we would even be getting out of bed. Essentially, had a broken back, came in, and every time he's on the field for the Baltimore, he's the heart and soul of that entire team. But you watch Anquan Boldin and Torrey Smith, each 96 yards for Torrey Smith, 102 for Boldin. These were your receivers a few years ago. Now they're making plays for the 49ers, and there's nothing outside of Crockett Gilmore and Steve Smith in Baltimore.
I know it's tough to watch with your Harbaugh or Flacco. Got to be tough to watch those two guys scoring.
It's a little bit, I guess you're not allowed to really say this because he's done so much, but Ozzie Newsome should get a little heat, you would think, right? You got this franchise quarterback you're paying $20 million a year, and you didn't give him the team.
Well, you must have read my post because
it was awesome.
I might have erased it in the end, but it's basically I feel like this front office put this team together poorly this season. There's no way around it. In the past, Baltimore's had what appeared to be weaknesses on paper, and they shore it up, and they're still going to win 11 or 12 games. There are distinct weaknesses with this team, and really the secondary is an absolute disaster every week.
On the couch, MJD and Ike Taylor both were referring to Flacco as a check-down quarterback, which isn't exactly what you want to hear.
That's also not true.
But he said that his game works best when he has someone, I guess you could say this about any quarterback, but when Ray Rice was there, that's when Joe Flacco could be his most effective. He had someone to check it down to. He doesn't have that guy.
Completely not what their offense is. That's
Listen, go tell Ike and MJD.
He's throwing for 350 yards a week.
This is all factually correct.
What?
That they said that. And it's not true.
They also laughed at me when I said that Brian Hoyer would start another game this year because Ryan Mallett is terrible.
Oh, don't cross Wes.
We need to.
I haven't been back since. I'll tell you that much.
We got to get Solly Wilcutt in the studio because he laughed at Greg when he first came in around the NFL television show, which we used to be on. He laughed at Greg when Greg questioned Peyton Manning, and then he disappeared. You were on this past Thursday, and Solly was nowhere to be found.
Well, they called a knockout, TKO.
They got to trot out someone else next week to defend Peyton Manning against you.
Wait, hold on. How bad is Levi Stadium turf?
It's the big bell bottom.
Wait, what happened?
Justin Tucker, his foot sunk into the field on that kick, and he ended up missing
it. The craziest thing?
Seriously sunk.
It's happened over and over. That is one of those fields that gets killed.
Site of Super Bowl 50. The kicker's foot disappeared in the turf when he planted.
In a giant grass divot flies across space after he tried it was embarrassing.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because they built up that stadium too for so long of it's got all these 21st century innovations of the fan experience and everything is different when you're at the game. But we can't make grass.
21st century has been a little overrated so far.
They better call in Carl Spackler to head up that ground crew.
Who's Carl Spackler?
Oh, Spackler. Oh, yeah.
Bill Murray and Caddyshack.
I thought you were talking about...
Every 20 minutes on the watch, we'll get one of those references from
watch. I thought for a second you were talking Jim Toma. Was that his name? Or George Toma?
Oh,
they used to really have kind of a field expert who would go around to the NFL fields and fix them up.
TD, can we get like some type of signal or bell whenever Wes makes a dated cultural reference?
We'll work on that. For
sure. Okay, cool.
I think that was 1980 or 81.
It was a long time ago.
I got Colleen wasn't born yet.
It's about me.
No, but I did. How about I did get the Pee Wee Herman dance today from Steve Smith? I did recognize that.
Pee Wee's timeless, though.
I felt like that was.
Isn't Caddyshack timeless? Oh, no, I forgot. Dan hates the Caddyshack.
I am a little anti Caddyshack. I don't know. It just never connected with me. It doesn't mean it's not good. Let's move on.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to move on.
Do you like Caddyshack more?
Not particularly. It's fine.
Greg?
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
That's not a glowing endorsement.
Well, I'm trying to think of when's the last time. It's like, how can you have an opinion about anything you haven't seen in the last 10 years? I think they all should be thrown out the window.
What about Airplane?
I love Airplane. So. I have seen it.
So there you go.
But I've seen that recently, and I still know that I love it. Caddyshack, I feel like if I watch it now, I might not love it.
Wes, your thoughts?
Caddyshack is one of my top five favorite comedies. And I think
and you know what? You're not alone.
Slightly un-American if you don't like it.
You take a lot of jabs, Wes, at sports writers.
I do.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite activities.
The thing, like sports writers, what they really like to do is listen to Bruce Springsteen and watch Caddyshack.
I love to do that also, but I don't like stand around all day quoting Caddyshack and telling people how great Bruce Springsteen is.
You would just like us to carve 7 minutes out of the podcast to discuss it.
It's about me.
Don't think that I've been the one discussing it. No, I think Dan has.
To be fair, that's
Mark's right. In a rush. Mark gets in a rush late in these Sundays. He wants to get out of here as quickly as possible. So let's move on to your old friend, Brian Hoyer, who threw 3 touchdown passes, all of them on third down, and the Texans improved to 2-4 with a 31-20 win over the Jaguars. Wes, the struggle for progress continues for 1-5 Jacksonville.
Yeah, Blake Bortles is on pace now for 4,350 yards and 35 touchdowns and about 300 backbreaking interceptions. Mm. I mean, their offense moves the ball. They look pretty explosive at times. But he had a backbreaking interception right before halftime, had another interception in the second half that was really hurtful, and missed a couple of wide receivers who were wide open for potential long touchdowns. Mm. So I think as well as he's playing, he's not helping them in the win column.
At some point, their progress is faced with reality, which is that if you're ranking teams based on results, they're number 32 right now because they just lost to the Bucks and the Texans in back-to-back weeks.
They're fourth.
It doesn't get worse than that. They have one win, which is tied for the worst spot.
And the problem now, too, is let's say Bortles continues to make progress, but they go 3-13 and front office decides they need to start fresh with the GM and coach. Then Bortles has to start over. And once you get into that situation, that's how progress gets stunted.
I don't think the offense, because watching the Bucs game and then this parts of this one, that the offense feels close.
There are a lot of these young pieces.
And it's interesting that it's the defense on a Gus Bradley team that had no pass rush last week when they needed it. There's no distinct element to this defense that sets it apart. And you're years into Gus Bradley's program. So I put it on the coach. It
doesn't help that Blake Bortles is also the team's leading rusher today.
Yeah, if they don't get T.J. Yeldon back, I mean, Toby Gerhart and Denard Robinson, they're not going to get it done.
They're back to where they were last year on the ground, and that's a disaster.
Wes, is DeAndre Hopkins the best wide receiver in the league that nobody talks about?
Yeah, he's like Jordy Nelson and Golden Tate used to be before people figured out they were good. DeAndre Hopkins is incredible. He made a bunch of circus catches today. He's on pace for 140 catches, 2,000 yards, and 13 touchdowns.
With the worst quarterback situation in the league.
Yeah, the guy is unbelievable. And he's also has more targets at this point in the season than any wide receiver since 1991.
Wait, Brian Hoyer's like last 5.5 quarters are Sterling, though.
That's fair.
I mean he was amazing today.
Last week and good this week.
He was facing the Jaguars defense, which made the Buccaneers look good last year, and he has benefit of Arian Foster to help move the chains. But that being said, he's so much better than Ryan Mallett.
Yeah, I mean, Hoyer, they probably should have. If this season isn't going to go anywhere for Houston, it probably won't, because Brian Hoyer, even if he started 16 games, they weren't going to go off. But they probably should have had a little more patience in hindsight. Because
more than three quarters worth of patience?
That was a huge
mistake.
Maybe
3.5 quarters.
That was bad.
But if we think Andy Dalton's going to come back to earth, I guarantee Brian Hoyer does.
He will. They're not
going to this situation.
They're not going to face Jacksonville every week.
All right, let's move on. Another team that needed a win. Dan Campbell for president. Make America great again, Dan Campbell. The hulking interim coach looked like a genius in his debut, turning the Dolphins into a ground-and-pound beast in a 38-10 win over the Titans. Colleen, will the Dolphins lose another game with the teal Incredible Hulk wearing a headset?
Yes, but Dan Campbell, first of all, I felt like the orange collar he had on that polo was extra bright after they won. He was...
That's weird.
I know, but it was just like he was radiating. I think after the comments that he was worried about throwing up on his shoes kind of thing before leading into the game. The way that the defense responded in this was one of my biggest takeaways because they only had one sack coming into this game combined as a team. And just in the first half alone, they had four sacks, five and a half sacks, and Cam Wake had four of them. So they were, I mean,
the defensive line woke up.
Such a difference from what we've seen this entire season. And, I mean, Ryan Tannehill, he didn't really respond any differently. But that defensive line did, and Jarvis Landry, too.
Oh, right. So Dan Campbell's – that's Joe Philbin sitting at home watching on TV going, like, hey, great. Cameron Wake, our best player by far, is healthy again, gets four sacks, and this clown in a tight shirt gets all the credit for it. Like, he had anything to do with Dan Campbell.
I'm motivated. The Oklahoma drill did the job. Get me a brighter collar. Lamar Miller, how about this, Joey Phibbs? Maybe you give the guy that was like a top 10 running back in the league last year the rock and see what happens.
Yeah, over 100 yards. I mean, I didn't think we were going to see that, but he had more yards in this game than he had in combined the last three games. So he's finally running the ball, and that's what they need to do. If they have him and he can do that, why aren't they running the ball more?
And there was a little bit of a controversy with a low hit on Marcus Mariota of the Titans. After the game, Ken Whisenhunt, who might not be long for this job in Tennessee, he had this to say about the hit by Vernon on the defensive line of the Dolphins.
I think it was BS. I think it should be taken out of the game. That's not the way you play football. I think it was done with the idea of trying to hurt our quarterback, and that's football.
Ooh.
He's angry.
Showing some fight. Good job, Ken.
Yeah.
Les, your thoughts?
Connor Orr covered this game for us and mentioned several times that he thought the Titans should have taken Marcus Mariota out of the game because he was getting battered around so much and that the offensive line was getting clown-suited by Cameron Wake.
They're missing their tackle, their center.
And he got hurt, it appeared. He was down. It looked terrible. It looked like he was going to come out, and then he stayed in there. He showed some toughness. But maybe if Wisenhunt, you know, is that worried about him, this was the time to call off the dogs. And he did eventually. He put in Mettenberger when they were down, I think, 17 in the fourth quarter.
But he had to wear a knee brace when he went back in, too. He said that Vernon apologized afterwards, which I know carries a whole lot of weight. But
I mean, the Titans are in Forkville, right? Because we were hanging on during their bye week.
The committee's got to get together.
We'll talk on Tuesday.
We can discuss. I know where my vote goes because, again, this is another AFC South team that has zero going on when it counts.
We need to retire to our conference room. Got some Danish. Some coffee.
Where is this conference room?
It's only in the basement
next to the chem lab.
It's in the basement of the Alamo. See, I could do 80s references as well.
Well, it's weird how you're just excluding Colleen automatically. I think it's worth inviting her to the committee.
I vote for that.
Why not?
Bring her in. Dan, I don't know if Dan likes this.
We can use a fresh...
Dan's like, hey, this is our boys club.
Dan, we drink coffee.
We'll buy one more Danish.
Putting dames in the club? I say no. See? No Dizzy Dames in our club.
Charlie Cancerly in the podcast. Dude.
Man business. Oh, of course, Colleen's welcome. We could save some Danish. Some coffee.
Get an extra one.
Yeah.
Buy one more.
So nice of you. Thank you. I love Danish.
What does a dame have to say? I don't care. Yeah, sir. Colleen, you've done it again.
Great.
You've done it again. You've come in here. You delivered insight. You delivered some, keen insight on the games. You've brought in some humor.
Please keep going.
You're charming.
Thank you.
Charming.
I love coming here on Sundays.
Both insight and keen insight.
Which is important. Very different.
So we will see you again next week.
Yeah.
And so that's it. That's
all right.
Colleen.
I'm out.
As Colleen heads out, the Wolf Woman.
Bye, everybody.
Our attention to Sunday Night Football. The Indianapolis Colts at home against the New England Patriots. You guys, you know, there's a little bit of heat, a little backstory in this one. Something about deflated footballs. Or were they, Wes? Let's get into that first. No, just kidding. Let's just talk
about
the game. the Colts and the Patriots. And this is a game Tom Brady throws for over 300 yards, throws for 3 touchdowns. LeGarrette Blount rushes for 90 yards and a touch. The Pats jump ahead, stay ahead, end up winning the game by a final score of
34-27.
Thank you. 34-27. My computer shutting down like my sinus cavity right now. But, you know, this is a game that was a close game and surprisingly close. People thought this would be the biggest blowout in history. 80 burger talk going around. But this was a 6-point game with late in the third quarter when Chuck Pagano called a play that, quite frankly, let's be honest, if things go the wrong way and their owner acts a certain way, it could cost Chuck his job. He calls a bizarre fake punt attempt involving Griff Whalen, who is, of course, the centerpiece of Connor Orr's his Madden football team. I don't know what they were trying to do. It was a 4th-and-3 play. If you're watching on YouTube, you could an NFL Now, you could check it out right here. The play is snapped for whatever reason. Immediately a loss because there was 5 Patriots defenders. The Patriots quickly take over, score again. That ended up being all they needed. They gave up a late score. 34-27 final. Greg Rosenthal, listen, throne of ease, if you will. Not what you were looking for in terms of a blowout that made the Colts look terrible.
I wasn't looking for a blowout. It's great. You go to play one of your biggest rivals from the last decade, although it's been a one-sided rivalry ever since Andrew Luck's been there. They haven't won a game. This was the closest game, and they pretty much did what they wanted to do on offense. If it wasn't for Julian Edelman's drop that turned into a pick six, this game maybe doesn't look quite as close in the fourth quarter. But that play was all the enjoyment I needed out of tonight. That was
that's what you'll have to settle for. And that'll be the narrative for, you know, obnoxious Pats fans is that, well, we got that trick play and that's all we needed. But it was very embarrassing by the Colts. I mean, it was the play that's how this game will ultimately be remembered.
I mean, we saw on television that Chuck Pagano seemed to mouth to Griff Whalen afterwards, like, why did you snap that? Because we'll have to hear more from the coach himself, but it seems like they were trying to draw the Patriots off sides. They jumbled the defense around. They got a little bit caught off guard, but the Patriots were wise. They kept 5 guys right home over Griff Whalen, and when he snapped they just smothered him, and it was over. And from there, the Killers, they just march in for a touchdown.
To what end? I have no idea what the Colts were doing on that play. I am genuinely curious to hear the philosophy behind that formation.
Well, maybe Griff Whalen, who has been the centerpiece of Connor's Madden team. It's a Patriots post-Deflategate team that may be moving to another city. Maybe he was secretly trying to win this game for the Patriots. I don't know how this all makes sense.
Throne of sleeves.
Between
indeed.
The two worlds. But look, Griff Whalen did get a touchdown later in the game.
The play got whistled, so the Colts aren't even allowed to set up in that formation, apparently. Why would they even try it?
It was one of the worst plays in special teams history that you could ever think of. But it's got to distract from the fact that Andrew Luck really struggled in the second half. Maybe he's not healthy, maybe he is, but he was spraying passes. I don't think he's the most accurate quarterback, at least compared to the quarterbacks he's at the same level of, you know, the top 5 to 10 quarterbacks. He's not always the most accurate, but he was spraying passes.
I think it's fair to ask if his shoulder's not back to strength yet, because it's not the same guy that we've seen before.
He hasn't played well all year.
That's true.
Before the strained shoulder, I didn't think he was throwing well in the season opener or week 2.
Had a good first drive where they go down the field and they have short passes, but the Patriots seem to kind of figure out how to drop another guy underneath. And when you took away the first read, this isn't what the luck that we've seen, that when you take away the first read, he gets flummoxed, but that's what was happening.
It seems like with the Patriots every week too, you know, they did a pretty good job on Rob Gronkowski, held to 50 yards. But when that happens, one of their other chess pieces blows up. Danny Amendola has a big night. It just seems like every week it's a revolving star for this team, no matter what they do.
And the defensive line really got a lot of pressure on Luck late in the game. My favorite moment, I know this is going to sound like a homer, late in the game, Tom Brady, it's 2nd and 4. They're trying to kill the clock, and he has an unbelievably bad delay of game. Did you guys see that? Yes. An unbelievably bad delay of game coming out of a Colts timeout, and he wasn't even close to snapping the ball. And you can see Belichick in the headset going, GD Tommy, you know, what the was that? Like, he was getting
ooh, dissension? No, I'm just saying
he's getting pissed at Tom Brady because it was a terrible mistake with 3 minutes left in the game. It's like, that's why I like Bill Belichick.
Here come the trumpets and the page boys as Greg gets carried around the New England territories
cherubic
on
children
his throne.
With grapes and a harp. The sun has a face, and it's smiling down upon the throne of ease. And you know what? Next week, 5-0 Pats, 4-1 Jets. That'll be fun. On the other side, the Colts. Now, they're 3-3, which is okay when you're playing in the AFC South.
It's fine.
But you have New Orleans at home, and the Saints, we're not going to go crazy about the Saints, but they could be frisky in that spot. And then you go at Carolina. That's an undefeated team. And then home to Denver. Be careful. Be careful, Andy. This thing could spiral on you.
They could win this division at 7-9.
Be careful, ATNFL podcast, who's already forked the Texans and has the Jaguars lined up for forking them.
We're thinking about the Titans, too. Yeah, we might fork the rest of the division.
That's how we got in trouble last year. We forked everyone but the Saints last year in the NFC South, and then we got banged.
I don't know. I mean, oh, watch out. Like, that could spiral out of control. Because, and they could be 3-5 is, I guess, what you're saying. Maybe they
3-6. They could be 3-6.
Well, first of all, the Saints on the road, let's not get carried away. They lost to the Eagles by 29 the last time they were on the road. And so what if they were 3-6? 3-6 is very likely first place in the AFC South.
Absolutely.
That's a great division, guys. Anything else, Wes? I'll give you the last word on this game. 34-27, Pats win Sunday Night Football.
I need a beer.
Well said. I could use one as well. That is our Sunday Night Spectacular. We covered every game, and it was a great job by all. The effort was there. Execution? We'll have to listen back to know. But the effort, I could tell everybody was
a lot of effort.
Totally involved, so that's it. We will be back on Tuesday with another week of shows. Mark, the wheel goes round and round and round. So we will talk about the Monday night game, preview Thursday night football, the news, all the fun stuff.
Mark will be on his way to London by then.
Oh, yeah. Have fun.
I may be here for that show.
Oh, that's
we'll
right.
see.
We'll be here for the Tuesday.
Game time decision.
But then you're leaving.
Excellent.
Then I'm leaving.
Good. So that's what lies ahead. But until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm, the mailman. The boss. Jesus. TD and everybody else behind the glass. Till Tuesday.